Hey, boys and girls, grab your capes and cowls. It's that time again. Superhero Speak, episode 37. Hey, everyone. If you didn't catch it, last week, John and I were on a podcast called Crisis on Multiple Podcasts that is hosted by Frank Duran, and we were discussing The Great Alan Moore. It was a lot of fun, and you should go on YouTube and check it out. Speaking of Frank, he was actually a guest last night on Agents of Speak, where we talked about the latest episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and you guys should jump on YouTube and check that out as well. That was a lot of fun. This episode is Ben and I, and filling in for John is our friend Johnny Fournier from Nerd Unemployed. We talked about the rumors that they're going to make Wonder Woman Kryptonian in the next Superman movie, plus the return of Peter Parker in Amazing Spider-Man number 1 coming out in April. It was a lot of fun, and we hope you enjoy it. So, here we go. Listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
This is Ben.
This is Johnny.
Yes, that's right. Filling in for our good friend John O'Grady this week is Johnny Fournier, our West Coast speaker.
Part of our West Coast Avengers.
Yes.
West Coast Avengers.
How you doing, Johnny?
Not too bad, not too bad. Been a little bit out of the podcast world and gearing up to get back in the new year, so.
Nice.
Yes, I've noticed that there haven't been a lot of new Nerd Unemployed's out.
Oh, no, yeah, it's been a little slow. I've been a little less than unemployed, luckily, so making a little money and starting some new stuff, so.
Right.
There are worse reasons to not be recording than being employed.
So, I guess we'll start off with what we were going to originally talk about this week. So there were rumors, if anyone hasn't heard yet, we all know that Wonder Woman's definitely going to be in the next Man of Steel, but...
And she's cast. And she's actually just started going into training, like workout training, to get physically fit for the role.
Right. But the rumor was they were going to make her another Kryptonian.
Yeah, it was sort of a thing thrown out by, I forget the name of the guy, honestly. I probably should have looked that up before we started. But this guy was throwing out the idea that, she and the Amazonian people would end up being from that initial scout ship that they found in the Arctic and have been on Earth for generations, and be Kryptonian in origin, which would explain the power set. And a lot of people jumped on that as being, inside information that somehow because he has worked with the people who are working on the film, that somehow he has an inside track on this stuff and assumed that it was essentially, rumor / fact. He's more recently stated, look, this is not that at all. I was just sort of positing an idea that I thought might be viable, but I really have no idea what they're doing with the script. So it's not... It hasn't been confirmed, and it's not official, and it may not have any, teeth to it at all. But it is definitely worth exploring and discussing.
Right.
Because many of us find it disgusting.
Yes, it's just interesting because it's like, as moviegoers, do we really need everything to be, in a nice, neat box and make sense? Or can it just be, no, she's Amazonian and has these powers because they're imbued from the gods,
That's kind of how I felt about it, too. It was like, I understood the principle, like, okay, people who aren't familiar with the universe, this is how we explain it because we have canon in this new movie universe, and somehow this is going to make people understand that she has powers. I felt it was a little unnecessary. I wouldn't go so far as to say, like, oh, I'm just totally against it because now she's Kryptonian. That makes no sense. But it did seem like one of those things where, do you really need to explain it that way? Or can you just go with the fact that she was molded from clay and it's a beautiful gods and stuff like that?
Yeah.
But the way that I kind of looked at it later was more that, like, it reminded me a lot of the way that in the Marvel Universe, Thor and the Asgards aren't gods, they're aliens, as they kind of explained in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show. So in a way it kind of works, but it feels so unnecessary, and that DC has the opportunity now to make their universe bigger than just, you know, Superman. That I think it's kind of a bad idea.
Yeah, and it feels like a cop-out. It feels like lazy story writing to me to an extent. Because, yeah, I can see how it might feel like everything fits together that way and it explains things. But, you know, and I'm not saying that the mythological way is the best way, necessarily. It does have that issue of not meshing well, which Marvel obviously faced that with Thor. And they obviously decided to go a different route and make the Asgardians aliens from a different realm of the galaxy. And perhaps that makes sense for DC to try to come up with some similar explanation for Wonder Woman, but it doesn't have to be Kryptonian.
Right.
It just feels like it's the easy way, and it's not necessarily the right way. It doesn't stay true. Yeah, it's, you know, the fans are looking for more than that. The fans are looking for Wonder Woman, not some Kryptonian that takes up the name Wonder Woman.
Right.
Well, it's almost like a weird layup for, like, Supergirl. It's like,
that's
his cousin, like, but she's Wonder Woman now. Like, whoa, okay, wait a minute. How can, just make her Amazonian and we're good to go.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, like Johnny just said, we already have Supergirl, you have Power Girl. I mean, there are already female Kryptonians that have powers. If you want to introduce one of them, go ahead, but don't change Wonder Woman just to make it more palatable to a large audience, because it doesn't make sense
to
diehard fans. And that's,
put the effort in, find a way to make it fit.
Yeah, and I kind of feel that's a quick way to kill a comic book franchise in the movies, is to completely go against the comic book fans.
Yeah. And I posited this to you the other day, Dave, that there may be, while this guy says that, you know, he didn't really have any inside information, that this was just sort of, you know, something he came up with as a idea, that there may actually be a little bit more to it, that there may be an effort going on behind the scenes that they're trying to, that the writing team is using these types of rumors as sort of a testing ground to see the fan reaction and to basically either accept things or rule things out based on how people react to them. I don't think that was the case necessarily with Ben Affleck as Batman, because that was, you know, confirmed based on him actually talking to him. But, you know, it could have been the fact also with things like, what's his name? Walter White guy.
Bryan Cranston
playing Lex Luthor. You know, they might not have actually talked to him, but they might have floated that rumor on purpose to see how people would react to it. And this again may also be one of those cases where, you know, they're considering, the writing team's considering, you know, this conversion, this easy layup storyline, and wanted to see how fans would react to it, so they threw it out there as a rumor.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because it is, in today's world, it's a real quick way to test something like that. Just throw it on the internet, and the right comic book geeks pick it up.
Right. Opinions will come flying very quickly once it's on the internet.
I would hope that Warner Brothers isn't that out of touch with DC to figure out what would work and what wouldn't work as far as...
Yeah.
Or maybe it's that DC's so kind of hands-off-ish. I don't know, it doesn't seem that way to me, but...
Well, it's possible that they're just as, you know, it may not even be a matter of Warner Brothers being out of touch with DC. It might be even that DC is out of touch with what fans would accept or not accept. I mean, look at what they've been doing with the comic book universe. You know, they're pretty much completely, you know, rebooting it and tearing it up and you know, remolding it from clay however they see fit with the New 52 and a lot of that stuff.
Right.
And there are fans who are not a fan of it, and they're losing some of those fans, but they don't seem to be deterred by that.
Right. I mean, one of the things that they've done with them kind of is one of the reasons I'm not a fan of it, is they've made Wonder Woman and Superman a couple, you know, and kind of like got rid of Lois Lane. And it's like, well, why would you throw away 75 years of history just because you think fans want to see the power couple, as it were?
Right. Yeah. Agreed.
You know, you're just completely changing Superman's story so that you think you're making one group of fans happy, but you're obviously alienating another. So, you know, so what I'm saying is that it is possible that, yeah, they will turn around and make her Kryptonian, but it's like, I hope not.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it kind of takes away a lot of Wonder Woman's credence to be unique.
Right.
You could almost, I mean, and in a, like, a really extreme kind of feminist sort of argument, you could almost say that Wonder Woman requires a man to have an origin story at that point, to have Superman.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of female fans might see it that way.
Right? Like, oh, you need Superman to make Wonder Woman viable, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many good stories for her, and she's, like, the most iconic...
Right.
Not even like, she is the most iconic, you know, female hero, that it's kind of prime time for somebody to come out and, you know, kind of rally right. that audience. But
absolutely. There was the TV pilot that bombed before it even got off the ground, which I think they also tried to sort of come up with more modern, plausible origins for who she was and what she was. And I'm not sure if that was part of the problem, but I'm sure it factored in that it didn't even make it onto television to go anywhere. But, you know, and Dave and I had discussed this offline a bit as well, the whole idea of, you know, could there be some, you know, Thor-like explanation for the Amazonians? And I sort of posited this theory that Dave did not agree with. But the idea was this, because if you're going to try to introduce, if you want to be able to do all the stories that are available that are good for Wonder Woman, to be able to spin her off as a franchise, you need the whole world, you need that whole realm. So you need the backing of, you know, the Greek mythology and things like that, but find a way to twist it so it's not actually mythology. So the idea that I had come up with is, What if the Amazonians were, and the Greek gods as part of that, were actually another humanoid alien race that had been monitoring Earth prior to the Kryptonian scout ship landing, and actually were involved in staving off these Kryptonians from sort of wiping out humanity in its early primordial phases and taking over the planet. And therefore, those early humans saw these people as gods, and came to revere them, and put them on a pedestal, so to speak. And you could even weave around that the whole, like, these could be just, these are aliens, but humanoid aliens, but they could be Zeus, and Athena, and, you know, the Olympian gods. And the Titans could be, you know, how they represented the Kryptonians in the story. And then, you know, and then once all that was settled and taken care of, they left a contingent to sort of monitor on the planet, but concealed with technology, and that is the Amazonian tribe.
Right.
But, that was scary.
But wouldn't you, aren't you afraid people are just going to say, oh, they're just copying off of Marvel now?
Yes and no. I don't think that's a huge fear. They still have to do some legwork to make all that fit together and work. You know, they didn't really have that same... The struggle piece wasn't necessarily part of the Thor story. You know, the only thing we got from the past of Thor and the Asgardians was that at some point they were on Midgard defending things back, you know, 1,000 years ago, enough that the Norse developed mythology around them.
True.
I would say the only real difference between those two is that Asgard, you know, Odin believes that he's a god. He doesn't go to Midgard and be like, yeah, I'm an alien, but you guys think that I used to be a god. Like, their mythology is still wrapped up in their own godhood.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the whole Tree of Life and the Nine Realms and all that stuff. They don't look at it like, oh, interdimensional travel and space travel and stuff. They still believe it to be, they're like kind of so wrapped up in their own mythology.
That yeah, but...
Like, yeah, we're not really...
Right.
I mean,
But I kind of see it as, like, there was that in Thor 2, if you've seen it, there's that scene where there's the little exchange between Jane Foster and the Asgardians who are trying to heal her, and, you know, arguing over what that, you know, it was the, whatever they called it, the soul weaver,
right.
Or something like that. It's like, so it's a, you know, a quantum field generator. It's like, no, it's a soul, you know, something or other, soul engine or something. And like, it's potato potato. It's, yes, it's, you can call it what you want. You can, you know, label it like it's some sort of mythical, magical thing, but it's still technology. You know, it's still something that someone invented and someone devised and arrived at that stage of technological development for you to have that and use it.
Right, but I think that, but it also points to Johnny's point, is that because they think they're superior, they're gods, it's like, you know, she's saying some nonsense. It's really a soul stone or whatever they called it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and you would have to do kind of some of the same things in, if you're going to translate that for the Wonder Woman, you know.
Sure.
And the Greek mythology and have, you know, but the whole her being molded from clay and life breathed into her, you know.
But
would they get away with that, you know?
Well, I think you could dance around that with that same, you know, premise that they, you know, they're not necessarily parallel to the Kryptonians in that they have, you know, the Matrix baby tree, but instead have, you know, maybe perfected some sort of, you know, randomizing cloning technology where it literally looks like someone's rising out of a bed of clay, you know, born that way, at some advanced stage of age. So not as an infant, but as like a child, and grows from that point. You know, that's all feasible within, you know, far advanced technology that some alien race could have. But, you know, if it's become accepted, you could call it what you want. So, and that could be how the Amazonians could be an all-female race, because they don't have to reproduce through traditional means. They have this device that can, you know, grow more soldiers or whatever they need.
That was sort of the argument in that rumor, too, is that they just devised a way, based on the Kryptonian tree, that they used only women.
Mm-hmm.
My only real issue with that whole rumor concept is that if Wonder Woman gets her own standalone, which she should, what is she going to fight?
Exactly.
Is it a Kryptonian problem, or can she fight Ares? Like,
right.
A Greek myth, without explanation, most people understand, because they went to, you know, school about Greek myths.
Yeah.
That or watch the show Hercules back in the day. That you can you can quickly understand about the Greek myths, and that her major enemy and maybe her first movie would be Ares, and then after that then they can start putting in her own sort of rogues gallery.
Right. And eventually getting to Cheetah and other
then,
things like that.
Also, but, again, if you make it Kryptonian, then Ares is a Kryptonian too, and then it's like, well, why?
Right, and that becomes a very complicated, slippery slope.
Yeah.
So essentially, it's saying, well, the whole Greek pantheon was a bunch of Kryptonians, and they're just being assholes and letting the Earth fall apart and not come, you know, showing up.
Right.
When a new group of Kryptonians threatens to basically terraform the Earth, where were they then?
Right. So. Exactly. Yeah. Why didn't they show up to help Superman?
Yeah.
Where was Batman?
Well, I know why Batman wasn't there. If I was Batman, I wouldn't get in the middle of that fight. He knows his limits.
I don't know.
Studying.
As our good friend John would always say, but he's the goddamn Batman.
Yes, he would say that.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trepidatious. I mean, hopefully they do a good job. But, again, I'm also leery about the whole, well, let's introduce the Justice League in a Man of Steel sequel and then break them off into their own movies. I'm not sure that's going to work.
Yeah,
I certainly hope Wonder Woman's participation is small. And not to diminish the character, but because we've already got Batman and Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe towards the end and be like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I could see that. That's the one thing that I think I've mentioned before is that, because there's also rumors about people playing you know, John Stewart's Green Lantern and Aquaman showing up, and you know, who knows who else? You know, an array of other possible heroes having some sort of screen time in this. Mm-hmm. To which I say, the only way that that really could make any sense is if this is a version of Earth where they already established that Batman is an older Batman. So perhaps he is an older Batman, has already loosely formed a version of the Justice League with these people, and so that's their introduction. You're not really getting anything of them. You're just getting a, oh, by the way, you know, we trust you now. Come join our league, and here's some other members. Right. And leave the actual development of those characters for future films.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, I mean, we'll see. There's so many different ways they could go with it.
Yeah.
I kind of feel, I'm also kind of feeling like to do justice to all the characters, it's going to be more than a 2-hour movie. You know, we're looking at like a three hour big screen.
A 3-hour explode-tastic bleak fest like the last one?
Exactly. Well, not a bleak fest. Let's have a little ray of hope in this one.
Okay.
The S stands for hope, guys. I don't know what movie you watch.
It stands for hope. Apparently he didn't bring any.
He just learned.
Yeah. So, all right. Any final thoughts on this before we change topics?
So, and I'm going to use this as a segue. So, I think instead of introducing all these different heroes, they should introduce a whole bunch of different Superman villains so that they can then spin off their own movies, franchises. Sort of like Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. Like the,
right.
Like the, doing a Sinister Six movie without Spider-Man in it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's got legs.
Well, it's got at least 8 arms.
That's true.
But speaking of Spider-Man, yes, the most funnerific news to come out this weekend was Peter Parker is officially returning.
Where the hope is.
Exactly. And they were relaunching Amazing Spider-Man in April with Peter Parker behind the mask again. Let me see.
Is it going to be issue 1, or are they going to like continue like 701?
It just says issue 1. Let's read the article real quick while I have this up.
I'll let you
Peter Parker is back. The New York Daily News has confirmed the rumors that Peter Parker will return in The Amazing Spider-Man number 1 this April. Here's the newspaper's word on whether Dan Slott plans to bring him back. 13 months ago, Spider-Man's alter ego was fatally squashed in the pages of his comic book. Peter Parker is about to make his miraculous recovery. The nerdy Queens-born superhero has gone out losing to the nefarious Dr. Octopus, who trapped his archenemy's mind in his own body. Blah, 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 blah. Yes, we all know the story by now. Dan Slott...
He is superior in all ways.
Writer Dan Slott knew Peter Parker's demise was not permanent, and the wall-crawling Mets fan would be back to the relaunched Amazing Spider-Man series that debuts this April. Okay, so yes, they're brought back the series, and that he will be behind the mask from now on.
Awesome. But I'm curious how they're going to do that, and I wonder what that means for the fate of Doc Ock, if he's going to be permanently gone, or if there will be essentially, maybe they'll find some way to do it where there's two Spider-Men tooling around, you know, the Superior and the Amazing Spider-Man.
Well, I guess you're probably going to have to read...
I probably will have to read, which I'll have to catch up.
March's issue of Superior Spider-Man, and then April's issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
Right.
I do think it's interesting that, you know, they're not going to go back to the numbering from the old. They're starting it all over again.
Yeah, it's not uncommon for them to do that, although it wouldn't surprise me if, say, they do go with number one for now, and, you know, could get up to maybe... you know, 15 or 20 issues before they decide, you know, let's start continuing the old numbering. And then that'll be like 720, and they'll go from there. I've seen that happen. What's that?
Isn't that what they did with Heroes Reborn?
It might be. I haven't followed that closely, but I mean, it's not unprecedented. It's something they've done before.
They did it at one point with Amazing Spider-Man. They changed the numbering.
Yeah.
And then that lasted for like 6 months, and then they all of a sudden, put the numbering back to what it was.
So it feels fresh for a while. Well, they did that with the Ultimate Spider-Man as well. Like they had killed off Peter Parker in the Ultimate Universe.
Right.
And when they switched over to Miles Morales, well, that they've actually kept the numbering. But I want to say there was a period where Spider-Man's had Peter Parker had an altercation where it wasn't sure what the outcome was. And so there was a gap. And then they eventually brought it back, but it had some different numbering for it because they gave it a different name. But then they eventually continued the numbering they had before.
Right.
So, speaking of Ultimate Spider-Man, though, I did read some interesting news about the Ultimate Universe, where they aren't afraid to kill people off all the time and shake the crap out of their universe. That's where they shake things up permanently.
Yes.
And along those lines, there's this cataclysm event that's going on. The outcome of which may leave the Ultimate Universe without most of its Avengers. And so they have a new title that they've started teasing, called they're not Avengers in the first place, they're Ultimates because it's the Ultimate Universe. The All New Ultimates, which will be a new team, which will include Miles Morales' Spider-Man, Cloak and Dagger, Kitty Pryde, Bombshell, which is actually, so far in my exposure, a villain. So that's interesting. And I think one other female character who I can't recall right now.
Huh.
But none of which have been ever traditionally Avengers or Ultimates. Oh, I think one of them is Jessica Drew, but taking some other name besides Spider-Woman.
What did you say, Johnny?
No, nothing.
I think that was our echo.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I might check that one out. You know, the Ultimates is interesting because it's, they kill people off and they stay dead.
Well, yeah, the Ultimate Universe in general is just sort of it's always been kind of volatile and they've done it. Sometimes it's kind of dark because the versions of the characters, like I don't like that version as much, but I can believe that that's a realistic version of that character. Like they've had, the Hulk when he first came on the scene killed a crap load of people,
right?
And whereas in the traditional Marvel universe, the Hulk never kills anybody. No matter how much he rampages, he's actually very aware of, the mortality of people around him.
Another interesting example was the Reed Richards.
Oh, yeah.
Is a very dark character in the Ultimate Universe.
Right.
Very ego-driven, very...
Well, he's been the villain more than once in some of the sequels.
Yeah. So that's kind of... Yeah, I mean, it's what makes it hard to swallow sometimes.
Yeah. But it's also, it's makes it hard to palate, but it's believable.
Right.
Yeah, you give people
that stands to reason that if they're going to do Cloak and Dagger, I don't know if they've already given their origin story or if it's going to be anything like their original origin story, which had a lot to do with drugs.
It's not, and I did actually, they did introduce Cloak and Dagger through the Ultimate Spider-Man series, and they basically were, the way they explained it is that Roxxon, Technologies was doing all these different experimentations, extrapolated from the types of things that Oscorp was doing that created Spider-Man and the other things they did, but it was tapping into apparently some potential that we have innately to manipulate dark matter that's dormant, and basically unlocking that. And that's basically how they created them. There are these two kids who on prom night ended up in comas, and then they sort of took them out of the hospital, pretended that they were, that they had flatlined and died, and then used them to experiment.
I see.
And created Cloak and Dagger.
Oh, well, that's not dark at all.
No, not at all. So.
Wow. Yeah, that's. I think I will check that out. At least, you know, first couple issues.
Yeah.
And then once it starts getting too dark and too weird for me, I'll be out.
Yeah.
Any other interesting movie or comic book news this weekend, gentlemen?
Nothing that I have heard as late.
There is actually one other quick article we could bring up that, they're talking about a spin-off series for The Walking Dead.
Okay. How do you do a spin-off? Is it from the zombies' perspective?
The game?
It'll be a prequel to, explain how the zombies came about and whatnot.
Oh. Interesting. I guess that would have sort of a limited shelf life.
Right. Yes, originally announced in September of last year, Walking Dead spinoff series has been dormant for some time, only following news being rumor, it could be a prequel. Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Well, yeah, prequels are in right now.
Yeah, well, they've been in for a little while, thanks to George Lucas.
With, like, Caprica, and they're apparently doing a Better Call Saul prequel to Breaking Bad. So
The Hobbit.
Yeah. I still need to get out and see that. I still haven't seen that yet, the second one.
Me either. They're hard to sit through. I'm sorry.
I know, and I really, I really wanted to get to the theater to see it. My wife is sort of, not sure she wants to go sit through it at the theater, and my son isn't going to sit through it. So I was thinking of just taking my daughter, and if she wasn't acting like a royal pain in the ass this weekend, we would have done that yesterday. So,
how about you, Johnny? Did you see it?
I saw the first one, and yeah, I was bored.
Well, there's a simple reason. Right. There's a very simple, basic reason why you're bored through most of it. Because it's a short children's book extrapolated into three-hour movies.
Yeah.
What are you saying? There was, you stretch some stuff out?
I'm saying that they barely had a plot in that first movie. You know how most books have sort of that beginning, middle, and end? Like, there's the introduction, there's the crescendo of action in the middle, and the climax, and then sort of the denouement at the end. Well, you can't make that, especially a book that you could probably read in 3 hours, into a 9-hour epic. It's not, doesn't stretch that far. And then somehow have mini arcs, and climaxes in each one.
No, that's tough. I mean, yeah. I said it before when they announced. First, they announced it was going to be two parts, and then when they said three parts, I'm like, yeah, there's no way it's going to be any good. And I'm not saying they're horrible movies, but they could have been so much better if they just made one movie based on the actual book.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I even liked a lot of what was in the first movie. But they could have done it in a lot shorter time frame. It didn't need to be as long as it was. Like, there were some themes they just beat us over the head with. Like, the whole, Thorin Oakenshield's, reluctance about Bilbo. How many times did they have to beat us over the head with that one in that movie before they showed his turnaround on it at the end?
I don't know. And when they did the trailer for the second one, it looked like he went right back into it.
Yeah, see, that doesn't make any sense.
Talking about, the faith, like, having faith in dwarves and getting his home back more than any burglar. I'm like, oh, God, just...
Yeah.
Throw the ring in the goddamn volcano. Oh, wait, that's the second.
Oh, so I read ahead a little bit in that article, and one of the reasons they have been holding off greenlighting the spinoff is because they don't want to diminish the mothership. The Walking Dead series, afraid that if they reveal things, it might take.
Yeah, because I would think that it also could lead to a downfall of the main series in that if they show how things came to be, then there's a chance to figure out a cure, or at least for the audience to figure out, oh, there's a way to fix this, you know, and wanting to see the show get to that point.
Right.
You know,
well,
whereas...
I felt the same way when they did the CDC episode. Like, I thought it was kind of cool, but, like, we didn't need it. I didn't need to know that there are people working. I understood that there would be, but it's really about people surviving and man's inhumanity towards man, not... how they came up with zombies, or, you know, why they're there, or any of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the zombies are... the fact that they're zombies is just kind of like a side thought, really. But, yeah, no, that's... that's true, though. I mean, I'm sorry, George Lucas, if you're listening. But you adding the prequel to... the Star Wars movies kind of diminished who Darth Vader was.
Ruined everything.
You know, especially Jar Jar.
Oh, God.
Didn't help.
I'm trying to forget him.
Well, he hasn't forgotten you.
I don't think he knows me.
Oh, he does. But yeah.
You gotta make toys, right?
Hmm?
That's what's important. You gotta make toys.
Exactly.
Oh, that's true.
Which is also, I guess, kind of the segue to Paul Dini's talking point about making cartoon shows for boys and not girls.
And toys are for boys.
Toys are for boys.
Toys are for boys. Girls don't have toys. Doesn't happen.
So being the father of a young daughter, what do you think about that?
Are you talking to me, I think?
Yes.
Certainly not me.
From my experience... my daughter does, in fact, play with toys and ask for toys and enjoy them and does have a handful of, you know, superhero-themed toys that she has bought, not only because she's interested in that stuff, but actually at least one of the toys that she had gotten was because of Young Justice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She had actually had interest in a Robin toy because she loved how he, you know, his role as a leader of that team, you know, she identified with.
Right. Oh, and you know, my daughter is a little older than yours, but she's a gamer. You know, she plays video games, and you know, she plays superhero based video games as well. So, to saying that there is no audience. For girls out there, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
I don't know that he said there's no audience. I just
no. Well, what he said was that basically the producers, you know, the backing for it basically were concerned that yes, they had this audience, but they didn't want the audience of girls. They wanted the show to be steered more towards young boys because boys buy toys.
Well, there's a lot more you can sell in that way if your cartoon is about. Generally, a bunch of boys. I mean, they throw in girls there every once in a while, but the majority of the cast is boys.
Yeah.
And you could sell toys, and you could sell video games, and you could sell Halloween costumes.
Sure, but you know, along the lines of Halloween costumes, you know, this past Halloween, my daughter was Raven. You know, from the Teen Titans. The prior year, my daughter was Black Widow from the Avengers. So. There's already that interest in those types of characters, you know, for Halloween costumes and for toys and things like that. As a girl, there is an audience there. And if you write the characters that interest them, and in those cases, those are characters that she could relate to and that interested her. And, you know, that's why she chose them. Not because they were the only girls in those shows, but they were the girls that she was interested in, that appealed to her.
Right. And it had nothing to do with Daddy's influence.
I didn't tell her what to do.
But then the producers are going to look at it and go, yeah, we can sell a Raven costume and maybe a Starfire costume.
Well, that's a funny thing.
Beast Boy, Robin.
I looked for a Raven costume. There wasn't one. We made her a Raven costume because no such thing existed. And the year before... it was really hard to get a Black Widow costume in her size because a lot of them were smaller, you know, designed for little kids or for like grown-ups and all sexy looking.
Yeah.
and building off that statement though, that, you know, appealing to boys and blah, blah, blah. If you've watched Teen Titans Go, it's very stereotypical between the boys and the girls on that show anyway. You know?
It is. Well, they're both stupid. I mean, they make the entire cast of them just a bunch of idiots.
No.
It is very following gender lines. You're right. You know, the boys are, you know, chauvinistic and gross and burp and fart and, you know, pick their nose and all that stuff.
And, just like all teen superheroes do.
Right, and love pizza. And the girls are, you know, into other, you know, girly things. And
I'm sure the plots are they've gone shopping and then suddenly some giant monster attacks and they got to go do something.
You know, what's funny is there's barely ever villains in the freaking show. It's most of the...
Well, no, that's right. The show's about the off hours.
Yeah, the show is mostly about them, like, hanging out in Teen Titans headquarters, which obviously is a building shaped like a big T, sitting out precariously on a mountain, and just the antics that they get up to when they're not fighting villains.
Right. I mean, and you can even, like, again, go the stereotypical that Starfire is the girly girl and Raven's the tomboy, you know, more of the emo chick.
Yeah.
You know.
Kind of a goth girl. Being that she is half demon, it kind of fits that she's goth. So.
And it's just like, and then Cyborg and Beast Boy are just the real stereotypical, they just want to sit on the couch and play video games type boys, and it's like...
Yeah. Eat lots of food.
Like, what kind of, you know, message is this to kids as well? You know? There's no real...
There's
no role models in that show.
Right. The thing is, they, you know, based on what Paul Dini had said that he heard from the producers, Cartoon Network whoever was involved in the cartoons answered, you know, it was what they had asked for was answered verbatim. They took a show that was intellectual, that had an arc, threw it out, and gave us a show that has no arc and no story and just lots of boy humor.
Right.
It almost seems like I could picture, you know, like this was pitched as a joke, you know, to lampoon the idiocy of what they were asking for, and they loved it and greenlit it.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way when you watch the show.
Well, I can definitely see a group of producers and a group of marketing guys getting together and understanding that the generation is now a 5-minute generation. You know, Twitch watch, Twitch play. Yeah. You know, YouTube, this generation consumes everything in 5-minute intervals, so they're going to need something that's not so intellectual, not so cohesive.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it kind of frustrates me a little bit.
I don't agree at all, but yeah, that's just kind of, I mean, once you look at the numbers of how people consume information now on Twitter and on YouTube, and it's got to be quick, and it's got to get, you know, got to get in and get out real fast.
Wait, Johnny, is that why you didn't like The Hobbit?
Yes.
The 5 minutes.
We didn't go anywhere for 3 hours.
Right. I mean, really, a third of The Hobbit should have been 15 minutes. That's an episode right there of Adventure Time. So, but yeah, and the thing that bugs me with these 15-minute episodes is the fact that, like, it makes it a pain in the ass for my kids to follow the show. Even not that it matters. You can watch these episodes in any order, but half the time, when they air a new episode, it's a new 15-minute episode paired with an old 15-minute episode.
Right.
So there are no, like, they don't have them paired, you know, with two new episodes together all the time. It's all, you're half the time you're only getting one new episode.
Right. Well, but again, there is no story arc, so it doesn't really matter.
That's true. But, like, it just sort of feels like a cheat. Like, you go to watch, you know, DC Nation Block, and you're getting cheated out of getting a full hour of new content. You're getting 15 minutes of new Teen Titans Go, 15 minutes of old crap, and maybe a half an hour of Batman if you stick around for it.
If you stick around.
Yeah.
I'd almost be worried as a, you know, in the hypothetical sense as a father, if you had a daughter who was into a character like Starfire.
Yeah, and there's actually been a lot of debate about that character along those lines, because the way this, in the comics specifically, I read a mother who was into comics, who had a daughter who was into comics, who had this conundrum, because Starfire is illustrated in the comics in a number of different teams in a number of different ways, and the way she's depicted in the ones marketed towards younger kids and to teens, you know, like the more family-oriented, she's more similar to what you see in the Teen Titans, you know, where she's smart, she's powerful, but she's also upbeat and optimistic, you know. And then there's the version of her as she's depicted in, like, the more mature comics, where she's basically, you know, half the time wearing a bikini, you know, very sexualized, very, you know, taking things in a different direction that's, you know, it's sort of, you know, duplicitous, because, you know, you see these young characters, these young girls who can grow up with this character and idolize this character, and then turn it into a sex symbol, and it's kind of hard for them to carry on with it, and might make them uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah, Starfire in the New 52 is very sexualized and pretty murderous, and not the same character at all. Not the wide-eyed alien from another planet giggling.
Right.
Happy-go-lucky. She's very, dark and incredibly sexually ambiguous.
Well, right, and it just seems like a decision that wasn't well thought out. Like, there's a lot of these decisions aren't made with audience considered.
Well, Alan Moore explained it best.
As he explains everything
best. We're all emotionally stunted adults, and that's why we have that version of Starfire in the comics.
Yeah. And it's funny, because I like that version of Starfire in the comics. I think she's really interesting. But, yeah, for a young girl to make that transition, that's...
Right, right.
I mean, you'd almost hope at the age that she's ready to read that, she's almost not into comics anymore.
Right. I mean, it's fascinating.
Well, it's not written for her. It's written for guys like us.
Right.
Exactly.
But it is fascinating, because most companies, you know, and we've used this term before, too, like, the characters at this point that have been around for 30, 40, 75 years, they're properties now. They're not just characters anymore. They're intellectual properties that are owned by these companies. And there's people at all these companies that want to sit there and say, well, let's make sure there's a unified version of this character that's always represented. And yet, it doesn't seem like that happens with a lot of, especially female characters, you know? Like, oh, here's the version for younger kids, and it's represented this way, and then here's the version in the comic books, and it's represented this way, and here's the version in the cartoon, it's slightly different. Like,
yeah.
Why isn't that happening more is what baffles me.
Well, and I know that they make attempts to do comics that are more based on, you've seen, like, in the comic shop, they have, the younger skewed Adventures of Teen Titans or Adventures of Batman, where they're based more on the animated series. So they make attempts, but I don't know what the sales are on those books.
I don't think that they're great, mostly because I don't think they market them well, and they don't keep them consistently available. Like, my daughter had gotten into, they had a couple of these books of the Tiny Titans, which are definitely very, you know, more similar to the Teen Titans Go type genre, but it's definitely good. It was good introductory, you know, for young kids to be able to read on their own and follow these very simple and fun, you know, lighthearted stories, but introduce them to a bunch of different characters.
Right.
And she liked those, and we got a couple of those, but she could only find them. We could only find them in these, like, you know, thick bound, you know, paperbacks. You know, we never saw them in the comic shop as issues, and it seems like the publisher dropped them off. All, you know, DC's dropped them off altogether, so they're not even available anymore. So they did a handful of them, and they stopped doing them. And a lot of the titles are like that, where they do these things for a period, and they just sort of let them fizzle out. It seems like some of the Marvel ones, they are trying to do more consistently. I've seen, like, Marvel Ultimate Spider-Man that follows similar adventures that they have in the TV show, and with some of those other shows as well, which are more appropriate to a younger audience, and have, right, you know, decent storylines and lessons and things like that.
Yeah, they've done that for a while. They've had the Marvel Adventures, or Adventures of Marvel, something like that, Marvel series Adventures, where they're geared towards younger viewers or readers, and then, you know, I think there's a Marvel Now series too that's also geared towards younger readers. So it's like, but they've had these for decades, you know,
right.
It's not something new, and they do try to keep it consistently going. The Adventures ones are like magazine format, and I think they come out. I don't think they come out monthly. I think they come out like maybe every other month.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like four or five stories in each one. You know, like there might be an Avengers one, a Spider-Man one, and a Wolverine story all in one book. You know, and a lot of times they're all geared around the same theme. You know, because I have a couple of them. But yeah, I mean, but they've been doing it for a while, and it's geared towards younger readers. And right, DC doesn't seem to keep that consistent. You know, like
yeah,
they feel like okay, today we want younger viewers, and tomorrow we don't care about them. I don't know. So anyway, I killed that subject. I accidentally bumped my lightsaber. Well, I think we're at about an hour now, guys. Any final thoughts or you have any final plugs for us, Johnny?
God, I wish. No, sort of. I redid the site. And I should be doing some new episodes soon, and also more live streaming stuff. One of the things that I wanted to do was, I didn't do it yesterday, but on Saturdays I was going to do Saturday Morning Heroes, and I was going to live stream playing superhero video games.
Nice.
Oh, well,
that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everyone will keep their eyes out at nerdunemployed.com for all this wonderful stuff from Johnny.
Absolutely.
All right. Any final thoughts for us, Ben?
None that come to mind at the moment.
All right. Well, I guess we'll end it there, gentlemen. So, as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Wonder Woman!
Hey, everyone. You just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak, which you can reach at ben@superheroespeak.com. And did you know you could also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John. You can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com. And if you want, there's our Twitter account, @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots. We'll be right back.